I am not one to multitask and to busyness oblivion. Piling on tasks where at the end of the day nothing was accomplished. My friend and colleague, Dr. James Spencer, takes tasks in increments. In the end, in a creative team, we naturally practice a creative flow. There is not a creative class, some kind of hierarchy of highly creative people. If we began to look at our work as a reflection of our Creator, we would begin to see the constructive view of what our job is. My story is the flow and practice between creativity and recreation. In that flow, I serve at the Creator's pleasure. That is the flow of worship and a creative conversation that starts early and works past my bedtime. It covers my relationships as a husband, a father, grandfather, and friend. And the creative discipline is that apprenticeship in which I live for. So when I lay my head down at the end of the day, the Creator gives me dreams that He has dreamed for me. There is only one battle. It is between the Creator and the deceiver, the creative and the destructive. When you start with creation story, you come to the paper, the easel, the studio, with a beginning, a middle, and an end. The elements and tension of man versus creative, man versus destructive, and man versus impulse is waiting for you. When I chose to fight destruction with my creative tools, I am on the same page as the Creator, and it is a continuing story. And these are the stories that show up for work every day. And as my friend and brother Lowell Booznitz says, God is waiting at work. This is my creative story and song. The first thing that I do every day is I start with story. What do you know about story? You understand that all stories have a beginning, a middle, and an end. Each of our lives has the same. We are a story that flows, like a river to a bigger body of water. Each of my moments begins as in Genesis, a lot of nothing, an empty canvas, or as a writer, an empty page. Every day, we make choices, who we work with and what we do. We can use the elements in what God has given us, word, light, and the quintessential ingredients of a new day. Or we could go back to bed and cover our head under a blanket of darkness. Or as the tyrant would say, I don't get ulcers, I give ulcers. To play a creative game of who I am and what color paint does God want for me to use today is, dare I say it, fun. Wreaking havoc in others' days is a lot of unnecessary work. Choose your color and tool over a weapon of destruction. As a writer, it is a paintbrush, a creative image that builds up, as opposed to a marker that takes down and kills the creative spirit in others. If our motive is to identify the timeless elements of creativity in me and you, we all win the game of life. When we give our offering back to reflect God's love, this is creative worship. Describe what vision and dream God has for you and me. Listen to the sound of our surroundings and make music, a joyful noise. Smell the aroma or the coffee, the dew on the grass, the scent of a room or person. Taste and see that the Lord is good, and touch the hand of your creator or your collaborator. It is a creative reality that sadly we too often suppress, and yet they are always available in your story. God breathes life into our nostrils. God speaks love into our veins If you are having a hard time imagining and realizing that, read the creation story in Genesis. And then, let's talk about how God can use these creative elements in living your creative story. If the genesis of our story is found in the quintessential elements of God-breathed word in our lives, then I also can hear His word spoken into my existence. When I realize that this is true to each human being, then I must believe that God's purpose is in finding that unique creative quality that He has built into me. How do I help you find that unique creative quality that He has built into you? Another choice and another game to play. What is my job today? Write it down. Now, go to your paint or toolbox. What creative quality that you have will be used in beginning the task He has for you each day? Write down your choices that are in your paint box. Have you ever asked God how He could use you in a certain situation? And have you ever asked anyone, how could I be helpful in a given situation? Have you ever asked God how He could use you in a certain situation? And have you ever asked anyone, how could I be helpful in any given situation? In previous discussions, I have spoken to this as taking inventory. I think that in a business sense, that is adequate. From a creative being perspective, it is the experimentation and imagination of stretching. What if there is a new tool or paint in your box that you have not yet explored? What if that particular piece was being developed in your studio for such a time as this? If you are the main character in the story and you recognize something and discovered that you could be used, if you took the steps to develop this useful tool, would you test it, develop, and implement it? How and what would the prototype look like? You can tell your story and you can ascertain how you could be of use to God and to people. Do you know who your co-laborers are? How can God use them in this work? The best ideas can be cultivated in fellowship, those places where a collective of stories, unique gifts, and talents come together to cultivate a crop that can be harvested in the rich soil of creation and recreation. A collaborative. In the early 2000s, I was writing for Associated Content, an early media platform that by 2010 was sold to Yahoo. Luke Beatty, a Denver entrepreneur who began AC, was more computer geek and had limited vision of what the possibilities were for journalists. Soon after, another journalistic endeavor originated from the Examiner franchise. Philip Anschutz contracted journalists in many cities around the world to write about their fields, hobbies, and interests. A writer would be paid a few cents per read, and the content was oversaturated. By 2013, the plug was pulled on the endeavor. In 2011, the content from citizen journalists had made a concerted effort to attach digital video to articles. Before that, there was a direct push for audio content, which became a combination of blog and podcast. The main players in online content creation abandoned audio content and research, and yet it is sound research that statistically provides accurate information for researchers. NPR, National Public Radio, has documented that audio research and development is more dependable than any other source, including Google, Base, or social media platforms. Audio podcasting is the most complete research tool for media professionals and creative work that there is. Audio publishing is, in fact, the most impactful source of news, creative advertising, original music, audio, video, with sound design, audiobooks, and cinematic soundtracks. Why? Partially because of the automobile. The other is the audio speaker. Privatized listening tends to divide and narrows the experience to learning on our own taste and understanding. This goes along with earbuds and cell phones. A shared audio experience is a learning experience of acquired tastes and sensory stimulus. Stimulating thoughts and conversations surrounding what we are all listening to. The time machine aspect of attending a concert before your time, a Broadway show, or a farm community. Hearing a sermon from a preacher and leader, or a speech or a lecture from a statesperson or a composer. Being there together and discussing what you heard is an uncommon experience for too many of us. Planting listening rooms around Colorado allows me to share this audio vision like art in public places. I can think out loud, speak, play, and sing. I can gather with other audio authors, singer-songwriters, community planners, and audiophiles. And we can play audio games, and we can learn together. Where can listening rooms be heard? At galleries, at churches, in libraries, and cafes, classrooms, performing arts centers, theaters, and gathering places. The invitation is come listen together. In Lamar, we can learn recording arts. In Westcliff, we can practice audio theater. In Denver, Boulder, Colorado Springs, and Pueblo, we can create listening rooms with great coffee and tea. At schools, we teach sound history, and your carpool can share all of these on the way to work and at home. Audio learning is quintessential. Listening rooms stimulate the senses. Listening can inspire each one in finding your voice. Listening room technology is an audio content library. Listening room technology is an interactive studio to share sound in private and public places. Listening room technology is anywhere you are and everywhere you are going that can take you anywhere you want to go in time, place, and mind. Listening room technology is a cure for writer's block, loneliness, depression, and narcissism. It inspires word illustrations, conversation, encouragement, and community problem solving. In the following pages, you will read and hear examples of how listening room technology can remedy self-talk, negativism, foster originality and creativity, while launching ideas into the marketplace community through developing communication skills, imagination, and objective learning skills in cognitive behavioral therapy. This is a true story. The names have changed so that you could identify with the common threads of this story. It could be my story, and it could be your story. Let's call the boy in this story Randall. Randall, a young boy of 6 years old in 1964, is given his first radio by his father. Radio was different than it is today, between formats and conversation, news, music, and sports. Even radio spots were crafted differently. In Long Island, New York, the boy would turn on the television at sunrise, with the test pattern shining bright. And then at 6 a.m, a friendly voice would announce the new day on WNEW Channel 5, New York, with a star-spangled banner, a color guard, and a band. The boy would sing along to the army band with his hand over his heart. Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light? After the song, there was a picture of the Empire State Building. It was understood that the transmission of this broadcast was coming from the transmitter on top of the building. The morning news, and then cartoons. A children's show with a guy who just did the news, Uncle Fred Scott. the boy marveled that the news program ended with the Mets and Yankees scores, and then a segue on the same framed screen would bring Huckleberry Hound into the living room, and an invitation to send a picture that he drew or painted to the studio, which he did. Uncle Fred would show the pictures on the screen. After Uncle Fred was finished, there was another kid's show with Sandy Becker, who would do characters for the children like Handbone. Dressed in a pith helmet with juice glass spectacles, Handbone would prance around the stage insanely to music by Red Sanders. Sanders was a jazz drummer from Memphis who played with a big band orchestra and was a composer of frantic style modern jazz. Sandy Becker was a New York comedian and actor who was a pioneer of children's television in New York. Meanwhile, in school, the boy was put into the slow reading groups by his first grade teacher. The real story was that at home he was reading the New York Times and books out loud. He was listening to radio news programs and the eclectic sounds of music that ranged from the Beatles to Duke Ellington and Broadway shows. He would bring in the morning paper, including Newsday, the New York Times, and the Long Island Press. And his father, mother, and he would do a round robin discussing what they were reading. His parents wondered why their kid was being perceived and placed into reading groups at schools that assumed he could not read. By June, Randall did enough to squeak into the second grade. On Randall's radio, he switched between News Radio 88, WCBS AM, New York, and WABC with DJs who played the latest hits. He continued to read out loud at home and discuss what he was reading with his parents. Randall had a summer birthday, and with two sets of grandparents, he had enough birthday funds to buy what he wanted. On his birthday, Randall's father drove him to the radio and television store. They climbed the stairs in the two-story shop in East North Ward, New York. Randall pointed to a portable record player that came in a carrying case. He plunked down the $14 and had some change left. His father said, "Why don't you pick out four records that you want?" Randall chose the original cast album from Oliver, the new Beatles soundtrack from the film A Hard Day's Night, Peter, Paul, and Mary at the Bitter End, and Edward R. Murrow's I Can Hear It Now. The news stories of the 1940s and 1950s, as reported by Murrow. There were no headphones, and Randall would share the music and the words with his siblings. He would share radio broadcasts of New York Met games, the songs from Oliver, Guys and Dolls, the Beatles, Sinatra, and spoken word with the neighborhood kids. The summer went fast. By September 1965, Randall would attend a new school. He was placed in the slow reading group again. His parents found a reading teacher to test and tutor him in reading. Mr. Gallagher looked and sounded like Franklin D. Roosevelt. He tested Randall on speed, comprehension, and reading level. He confirmed that Randall should not be placed in the slow reading group, but he shouldn't be placed in any reading group. There is no reading group that Randall would fit in, because Randall is reading at a seventh grade level. Randall went home, went to his record player. He looked at the grooves that separated the tracks, carefully placing the 33 and a third record on the turntable. He took the arm and slowly placed the needle down on the record and sang, "Where is love from Oliver?" When he went to his classroom at Broadway Elementary in Greenlawn, the teacher, Miss Donovan, announced to the class that Randall would no longer be reading in any of the reading groups. But once every week, he would come to the teacher's desk and read out loud the news from the Weekly Reader. It was his first anchor gig, When we come back, we're going to talk about how parents and teachers can help recognize the innate strengths and interests of young minds. You're listening to The Listening Room on Legends in Denver. I'm your host, Richard Arnold Beatty. Creative success. Hello, everyone. This is Richard Arnold Beatty on Legends in Denver. I began a show 3 years ago called The Songwriters Gallery. I had the chance to interview some of the most innovative songwriters in the history of popular songs. As a singer-songwriter, I was influenced by many of these songwriters, and many of you have written that you shared my excitement and reverence for these artists. Last year, I developed a show called Folk Process, where I continued with some great folk concerts from the Denver Folklore Center. I got a chance to talk craft with Jesse Colin Young, Danny O'Keefe, Tom Paxton, John McCutcheon, Taj Mahal, and we unearthed some classic live recordings. These programs were not met with as much enthusiasm as Songwriters Gallery, and I was asked to develop new programming that would fit the Legends format. And so the Listening Room concept was born. I grew up in the 60s and 70s, and that is why Songwriters Gallery was such a hit on Legends. Listeners identify with the singer-songwriter genre of music that started with the folk process of 1962, its influence on rock and roll, and then how through economic and cultural changes in 1970, how the Me Generation became the singer-songwriter confession booth of pop psychology, free lifestyle movements. At the same time, radio formats had changed. You could hear Broadway and Hollywood soundtracks and show tunes in the same set with The Who and The Beatles. You could hear Jesus Christ Superstar with Tommy and Godspell in the same set with Oh Happy Day and Mother and Child Reunion. You could hear Suspicious Minds by Elvis Presley in the same set with Get Together by Jesse Colin Young and Spirit in the Sky with Sunrise Sunset from Fiddler on the Roof. Were we more eclectic then or schizophrenic? I think it is more that we were open to nonconformists. In a book by psychologist and author Adam Grant called Originals, the author defines a thing of singular or unique character, a person who is different from other people in an appealing or interesting way, a person of fresh, innovative, or inventive capacity as being an original. Grant goes on to say that originality is not a fixed trait, it is a free choice. He makes the point that creativity and originality is an act of conscious will, not programmed into one's DNA. In a book and audiobook by psychologist Scott Barry Kaufman, Kaufman explores Abraham Maslow's idea of transcendence and self-actualization. Kaufman, who as a child scored low on intelligent quotient tests and SAT tests, was labeled as a kid who was not college material. Like the story of Randall, the IQ test proved to be a false negative in his development. While Randall's parents recognized his advanced creative thought process, it was a special ed teacher who recognized that Randall had advanced creative processes. Kaufman has since written books on the creative mind and Maslow 2.0. He is a psychologist and holds several degrees, including in cognitive psychology. The last stop on a long ride of my media and arts career is a cause. The cause is to disrupt the damaging effects of social media on individuals, relationships, and community. In that, I want to divorce myself from social media through listening room technology, authentic and thoughtful content that I can leave behind after I am dead and gone. There are still 16mm films and slides of pictures without sounds of my grandparents. And yet the sound recordings have disintegrated into dust. I remember the voices, and I can see the faces. And I miss the conversations I had with my father about these very things. I write, I record, I sing, and I play words that I want my children and grandchildren to be able to access. And I want to collect the stories of men and women who have something to tell us, teach us, and make us laugh, cry, and think. Finally, from a spiritual level, I want to plan a long-term foundation in living for what is really important. As the songwriter writes, "I'm sorry, Lord, for the thing I made it when it's all about you, Jesus. If I am true to the daily tasks of communicating story, the uniqueness and usefulness of our gifts and talents, if I can see what my co-laborers and collaborators bring to the canvas, and I can continue to cultivate and evaluate ideas by testing the Spirit, then what I am called to endeavor is in where I am called to serve and how I can ignite the creative Holy Spirit in myself and in others. That's how I see the success of my life work, at home, through work, and in community. Those are the integral parts of this business plan and the harvest of this orchard of perennial voices, words, music, and vision will be what I will leave behind. The rest of it is up to those who I love and those who love me."
Father to son, pass the baton, days of an era gone. Gone, not lost. Cost, the good and bad we pass on. Words slip through this menagerie. The times we've cut down the family tree. We travel from the old country, from me to you, you to me. Son, pass the baton, days of an era gone. Gone, not lost, count the cost, the good and bad we pass on. To every life, this tragedy, shining light. What lies ahead is what we see. Together we go on. Father to son, pass the baton. Days of an era gone. Gone, not lost. The good and bad.